And John Hoag's with us. Your calls, but we're going to get into the prophecies of the German Nostradamus when we come right back. Welcome back, John Hoag with us. Your calls, we'll get to them in a moment. Let's talk a little bit about the German Nostradamus, Matthias Stormberger, and some of his predictions, John. What do we know?
Well, we only have fragments of his work because the propaganda ministry of Nazi Germany in the 1930s thought his pamphlets, Surviving Prophecies, were so threatening to their future that they sent the Gestapo out and the stormtroopers out to throw a lot of his stuff into those bonfires with the other deemed degenerate or Jewish works that somehow went against the grain of National Socialism. And the reason being is that Matthias Stormberger, who was an illiterate cowherder who lived on the border with what was the Czech Republic and Bavaria. He was a Bavarian cowherder who lived between, basically he looked at the whole world seen from the view of his little forest between Kaltenneck and Deggendorf. And he then, from that little spot of his little world, he described things that would happen in this area. And I kind of reconstruct the situation where I try to explain to people that the future is a fiction, that our actions in the present either keep a fiction or make a fact, a nonfiction. And I sometimes wonder if a man like Stormberger, from my own experiences, I wonder this, and I write about some of them in the opening of this special chapter for the expanded edition of Prediction for 2014. See, as he walked out in the 1770s into this field to feed his cows for grazing, he must have seen imposed there the iron road that he describes in the first of the fragments that he talks about. He says, iron roads will be built and iron monsters will bark through the wilderness. Cars without horse and shaft will come and men will fly through the air like birds. So here's a man in the 1770s. I estimate that's around when he started having these visions. These visions were written down before his death around the year 1820. They don't know exactly when he died, but they think it was around 1820. He was born in 1753. So he's describing already, as a pre-industrial man, cars and planes and railroads. And he goes on to say, when in the outskirts of the forest meaning where he lived between those two towns, the iron road will be finished, and there the iron horse will be seen. And when it's seen, a war will begin to last twice 2 years. It will be fought with iron fortresses that move without horses and with powers that come from the earth and fall from the sky. Now, this is to the studied eye of a prophecy scholar, one of the most amazing fulfilled prophecies in history, because Kaltenneck and Deggendorf had a line, a rail line, built and opened on August 1st, 1914. August 1st, 1914 was the first day of the First World War, which lasted twice 2 years, from 1914 to 1918. It was also the war that saw the creation, invention of tanks, the iron fortresses that move without horses. And the powers that come from the earth are the amazing mines that were dug in and blown into the trench lines to create breakthroughs for attacks. And so that's the powers of the earth. And those powers that fall from the sky are artillery shells, are planes strafing people, are the mustard gas and chlorine gas that was used out of the sky in that war. So that's just the first of the fragments.
He was amazing.
Yeah, and then his next fragment says, right after the horrible war, World War One, there will come a time. It's always focused, by the way, on what happens to Germans. I call him the German Nostradamus because he does what Nostradamus does with the French.
Yeah, he hides.
He uses his people as a focus, as his eyes and ears in the future. So it's only from the German point of view. He says, right after the horrible war, there will come a time when money will have no value. For 200 guilders, not even a loaf of bread will be available. And yet, there will be no famine. Money would be made of iron and gold would become so valuable that a few gold coins, a small farm, could be bought. Now, right after World War I, the German Empire, the Second Reich, collapsed. And because of the Treaty of Versailles blaming the war on the Germans, even though everybody involved had their part in it, Germany went into a hyperinflation crash. It's the worst depression in history, where basically hundreds of thousands of German marks couldn't buy you a loaf of bread, even buy the suitcase full. It was that in 1920s or so, there was so much money they had to make that they started making it out of iron and aluminum, just like he talks about. Mm-hmm. So he's describing things that people started reading about before Hitler and the Nazis came. So they already were primed to be these prophecies to be a threat, because people were saying, yeah, he predicted World War I. Yeah, he predicted the rise of the economic collapse. So then he goes on to say the free life and thought will be imprisoned and banished, meaning in Germany. That's what comes next.
And he was right.
Yes,
again.
Severe masters will rule and will try to get everything under their discipline. You know, goose-stepping away, you might add, the Nazi movement. It will be a terrible time. Whoever flees should not look back. That happened. Now, he does another dating, quite remarkable, keeping from the clock of what happened with the Iron Road and dating World War I.
Mm-hmm.
He says, 2 or 3 decades after the First Great War will come a second, a still greater war.
He's right there.
Almost all the nations of the world will be involved. Millions of men will die without being soldiers. Now, what's intriguing about this prophecy is that he's seeing 2 or 3 decades, and in a way, he's accidentally done what a lot of good prophets do, where they see two things as one. 2 decades after World War I, exactly, to the signing of the Versailles Treaty in 1919 was 1939. That's the Second World War. But 1949 also launches the first incident of the Cold War. The Berlin airlift ended in 1949, officially starting the Cold War. And in both cases, almost all the nations of the world were involved in both. One was a hot war, World War. One was a cold World War. And in the hot one, millions of in the vassal states that fought the little wars that Soviets and the United States used as proxies, which is to the tune of 25 million people over the 45 years of the Cold War, the 60 million people that were killed in World War II, a majority of them, including the men, were civilians. He's right on all points.
He talks about also during that second war that the fire comes from the sky and destroys cities. Could that be Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Well, it's
in London.
It's the exact prophecies is fires will fall from the sky and many great cities will be destroyed. Whoever flees should not look back. And he's talking about refugees, but we're talking about the fire bombings of the cities of London, of Dresden, of Berlin, of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We're talking about the aerial bombings of cities that were rampant throughout World War II.
And he was hundreds of years before this, right?
This probably in the 1770s.
But what scares me the most, John, and scared in terms of concern because of his accuracy, he talks about a third major conflict.
Yes, he says, and after the Second Great War between the nations will come a third universal conflagration, which will determine everything. There will be entirely new weapons. In one day, more men will die than in all the previous wars combined.
My God.
Battles will be fought with artificial weapons. Gigantic catastrophes will occur. Now, in the German and in the way this reads, it, again, could be two things in one. There is a common theme in Nostradamus as well as in Stormberger that indicate that when the war of Nostradamus' third and final Antichrist takes place, it happens during a time of a planetary disaster that affects both animal and man, a unraveling of the world. It either is triggered by the war of the Antichrist or the war profits evilly from it in the chaos that is caused. But it's a breakdown, a defait in old French. It's an unraveling of the world of animal and man, which could be a 16th century man's way of trying to describe, in the case of Nostradamus, planetary climate change, which is, even those of you who deny that this is happening, even the CIA has come out with reports that were leaked indicating that they are seeing the next great national security issues being wars fought over resources and climate change as the second, as the new kind of warfare. So the, and I had talked about it about 14 years earlier before the report was released in my book, Millennium Book of Prophecy, which was released in 1994. So the thing is that when he talks about gigantic catastrophes, when he talks about a universal conflagration, that's a similar theme, that's a mixed metaphor for not only war, but a fire in the sky, of a hotter world, things that are common themes in a lot of the ecological prophecies, climate change prophecies that are out there. So it could be an expansion of both. So the thing that gets me is the most chilling part of Stormberger is what he says next, which is a challenge to all of us to not do this. He says, with open eyes will the nations of the earth enter into these catastrophes. They shall not be aware of what is happening, and those who will know and tell will be silenced.
That's interesting. What does that mean?
What that means to me, not just with walking, there's two things. Nostradamus, and I've said this on the show a lot, Nostradamus has a set of prophecies about Russia and America becoming friends, but the friendship being undermined by a Middle Eastern source, which then leads to a new Cold War that goes rapidly, very hot, in 13 years, and essentially causes the thermonuclear war we all thought was past history, ended with the Cold War. That it's actually, the danger is ahead of us, not behind us. That's one thing. The other thing is, that in lieu of the war and climate change being intertwined, I find it very telling to read this now in these days when tens of thousands of scientists are being denied the mountains of data, which is solid data, not just based on computer models, but actually based on scientific method that is proving to 95 to 99% of all scientists without a doubt that climate change is creating the climate literally where all this undermining and war will happen if we don't get a handle on what's causing it. The fact, these are the people who are, our governments are trying to keep people unaware of this danger because they are financed and controlled by the consortiums of fossil fuel industries that, like the cigarette industry, didn't want people to know there was cancer in the cancer sticks. The same advertising companies are being used by the fossil fuel industries that were used by Philip Morris and the cigarette people to extend this lie on you that these cigarettes are killing you. Now your atmosphere is killing you, and these people who want to make a profit out of it want to keep that lie going. And so the people that are not aware of this happening is you who deny that the climate is changing for the worse. And those who will know and tell will be silenced. They're being silenced by the fossil fuel industries that are putting out an ulterior scenes that make it sound like it's ludicrous that all this science. Science itself is not even being respected by this world before. So it's the scientists that are being ignored. And it is to your great peril, humanity, that you continue to believe these lies that are setting you up for these terrible prophecies of Stormberger, which are here to be stopped. Because he does say at the end of his prophecies that we could come through this, that there is an either-or situation.
How accurate has he been? I mean, these are obviously spot on, but I mean, what do you think his percents were?
Well, from what has already happened, it's one could say, and there's only one other set of prophecies that even comes close to this accuracy, and that is the man who wrote under the name of St. Malachi, but purportedly the prophecies of the Irish saint that was talking about the papal succession to the end of the papacy. I would say it's 80, 90%, which is almost impossible to find in prophecy. I'm impressed when I find 70%, because it deals, for things to look like they're preordained takes a level of mechanical stupidity in the collective human psyche to run down like a machine our history in repeating itself. I know that it's created a misunderstanding where people say prophecy is preordained and we're just, there's nothing we can do about it, we just live through it because it's already being preordained. To me, that's stupid talking. The reality is that we are so habituated by our programming that we almost make it appear like it's preordained, but it's not. And so with open eyes, he says, the people walk into these catastrophes is a warning to you in the present, in the time that you're empowered, to not walk with open eyes and ignore the climate change that's creating a situation that could later on cause a war between Russia and America that blows the world away like we all feared during the years of the Cold War.
Just amazing, John. Let's take some calls. We're going to finish it up next half hour with more calls. Vinny in Fitchburg, Mass., my mom's hometown. First-time caller. Go ahead, Vinny.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good, Vinny. Thank you.
Great opportunity, great topic that you're discussing about. I was watching the History Channel a couple of weeks ago, and they were doing the Little Ice Age, the extinction of the Clovis people, and they drew a direct connection from the Little Ice Age to the storming of the Bastille and the French Revolution. Mr. Hogue is absolutely correct in everything that he says. In the words of Descartes, I think, therefore I am. I'm an alcoholic, George. I'm a former smoker. Everything that Mr. Hogue is saying is correct. We are creatures that are being conditioned. And I sent to you, sir, some time ago a proposal. I've actually sent it to my elected leaders, and I talk about it constantly. It's called the Symbiotic Energy Production System. I attended a major Northeastern university, and one of the first things I learned in economics is that scarcity is all about economics. And I believe we can obliterate this dependency that the oil monopolies have basically shoved down our throat by thinking. What I'm proposing, sir, the most abundant compound on planet Earth is actually salt water. And I have some numbers here. For the cost of about $80 billion, we could construct 100 square miles of solar panels and actually use them as a fence, maybe a perimeter, and put these solar panels along the Arizona-Mexico border. And 100 square miles in a year's time can harvest over 400 terawatts of electricity.
Wow, that's huge. Look, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour here. But he's got some good points here, John Hogue.
Back in predictions for 2008, I talked about the solar farming possibilities, but I would even venture out into space that if we use the Lagrange points, 5 points around the orbit of the moon, you could put vast arrays of 24/7, 24 hours a day solar power, and then beam it down to the country, to the world. The stupid is the biggest enemy a mankind's ever had. If we start applying our creative thinking, if we start doubting and skeptically inquiring in the true sense of that word, not as cynical, but as neither for or against, looking at what can really happen. The capacity of the human being to make this world a virtual paradise is always within our grasp in the present, and these warnings from the future are to be avoided.
All right, we're going to come back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast show, you're going to love it. We're going to be talking about, Fukushima, for example, and some other issues. And then, of course, Friday into Saturday morning, those open lines. Let's come back in a moment, take the final calls that we've promised with John Hogue on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let's go right back to the phones with John Hogue, of course. We will go to Wisconsin. Jocelyn's with us. Hey, Jocelyn, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. Hi. It's so refreshing to hear somebody that actually listens to 90% of our scientists that are working hard on this problem that humans are causing. 40 gigatons of pollution every day, and 1 gigaton is comparable to 1 billion tons of pollution, but also one of my big concerns is the fate of our animal kingdom. I mean, the unspeakable cruelty that man does to our fellow creatures is something that I can hardly stand every day. What I hear, like with the dolphins and all that, just recently I heard that they they drilled these nail-like, it's horrible, into their brains. You know, it's just, I just don't understand it. There's just no respect. And I think that the game was pretty much over, being pessimistic, you know. An optimist is a pessimist with experience, you know.
Jocelyn, I would just say that I try to look beyond them because they are two sides of the same coin, just like hope and hopelessness. If you are consciously pushing hope, you're undermined by the subconscious hopelessness. If you're optimist, you're not encountering the pessimism that anchors it. I think the solution from my position as being a practitioner of the science of self-observation, of meditation, is that one has to look at a consciousness, or at least look at the hypothesis that there is a consciousness that is beyond these polarities, that is a witness to that. And if that witness is engaged 24/7 in all of one's mundane or important moments of life, that the hypothesis says that a living intelligence is awakened in us that can be applied to our phenomenal world in positive solutions. So the other thing that meditation teaches me is that humanity is running in this very deep primal habit that they kill the animals and destroy the world because we're still thinking we're those 8,000 cavemen and women who were in for hundreds of thousands of years a very large, natural, and hostile world. And so we look at Earth still as this place as if we're only a handful of people our species trying to survive. We have won that battle with nature with the industrial age, but we're still stuck in the habit. So my idea, my work in this work about the future is to show you the consequences of that habitual thinking and bring people back to where they're empowered in the present to change those actions. So hopefully the crisis that we're in is going to actually, I'm hopeful that the crisis that we're entering will actually force us to take a look at these things.
Okay. Thanks, Jocelyn. Appreciate that. The planet is going through incredible change, John. I mean, this winter is absolutely unbelievable, and it's not even over yet.
No.
In terms of predictions of the future of the climate, is it going to continue to get worse?
I predict that 2014 will be the first of 2 years that will be called the Super El Nino effect, that it will be an El Nino that lasts 2 years that will cause a lot of people in the eastern part of North America to think that there's an ice age, completely ignorant of what's going on in the rest of the planet, which is higher than normal temperatures, including the North Pole. One of the ways that you'll notice, and it's easy for me to predict because it happened with the polar vortex. I said, I made sure that I wouldn't even talk about it until all the temperatures were back up in the 60s again, after they were plummeting down in the teens and the sub-zeros. And whenever I talk about this again, when this current blizzard that's attacking a lot of you right now, making you look out your window and say, where's the global warming? If you study the science, scientists have been predicting this flattening of the Arctic jet stream that would cause a bleed out of polar air out of the polar regions down into the lower 48 because of the deep troughs that such a spreading of the jet stream causes. And another indication of it is that when this blizzard is over, you're all going to see the temperatures zoom way up to above normal again before the next one hits. And then suddenly in March, it suddenly becomes a very stormy and warm spring, just like 2010, just like 2011. Your short-term memory, people, is part of stupid in this war against stupid. Don't be so short-term in your memory and look beyond your backyard to see what the whole planet is going under. It's getting actually warmer.
John, did you just call us stupid?
I am one of those people. I am no more stupid than anyone else, except that I have one thing that I contend is something for you all to test, is that through meditation, I can see my stupidity clearly. and see that I share it with all the rest of you. The difference is that with meditation, you can see your habits in motion. You can see the machine that you are. You can see the zombie that is dreaming that it's awake and alert and in control of its life. And the seeing transforms that.
All right, let's go to the phones again. James in Seattle, Washington, out by your neck of the woods, John. Go ahead, James.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment and get your opinion on, like, the four blood moons, this tech fest that's coming up. And I see that Israel would probably be signing their two-state solution in this first blood moon in April. And I see World War Stupid happening, like, 3 years later or so.
The four blood moons, James, are a topic that's currently up in HogueProphecy.com in the article stream that's there. And it looks at a fascinating correlation between these red moon eclipses with sacred holidays in the Jewish calendar. It'll take too much time to explain it here, but basically the Six-Day War was during a period when this happened, and the Jewish independence battle in 1948, the first war of independence, was also when it happened. And now it's happening again, and it is a very... My concern is that the blood moon will be used in the negative to actually go to war and create the Samson option that I've been forewarning, is the danger of a precipitous attack on Iran to kind of force the United States' hand into supporting Israel in this. When you have Mir Dagan, the former head of Mossad, coming in the clear, coming on public radio and TV, even in the United States as well as in Israel, and calling these theories of Iran with a nuclear program idiotic, this just never happens. When he basically was telling Netanyahu in public that this thing is spurious. And this is a man, you cannot say that this man, Mir Dagan, is anyone who hasn't fought is Iranian extremism for all the years that he was involved in Mossad. He has been the most diligent fighter against any threat from Iran. He is saying there's no nuclear weapons there. And more other people came forth. And I am hopeful that because a number of people in Israel in the last election have kind of had enough of this adventurism, have taken some of the government back in the last election. So hopefully it can be stopped, because it'll be a disaster for Israel. It'll be a tragedy, a holocaust, a second holocaust that need not happen.
Did you see where the commander, the Iranian commander, said that Hezbollah was in this country already, John, ready to go in case anybody attacks Iran?
That has been a threat that's been around even back in the early 80s. And it is one of those kind of threats that should be respected, but that there can be cells. I mean, the other way of looking at it beyond that is if you don't have a lot of ways to fight back, you use whatever means you have. I'm not saying I support either side in this, but one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. A lot of you got to remember that back in the last Pluto transit of Capricorn, the British king and his aristocracy called us a bunch of terrorists. So, you know, people throw that bandy around and throw that semantics of terrorism around quite freely, as much as they call everybody a hero, you know, and it sort of cheapens the word or misdilutes or dilutes the meaning. And we have to look beyond these jingoistic statements and actually respect. And I mean that in the terms of the Latin root, to look deeper, to look again, closer at what's underpinning these issues. That's applying that meditative intelligence to find a deeper cause for our problems, and from there, solutions are truly possible.
All right, we've got Cornelius in Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius, thank you.
John and George, God bless both of y'all.
Thank you.
I believe in biblical prophecy, so I take a little bit different take on you, John, but I like you. I listen to all your programming and stuff like that. And this is my question, and I believe in some of the global warming that is our fault to a certain extent, but I believe the sun has a factor in it, along with God. So it's a combination of all three things having a factor, just like on the outer planets, they're getting warmer. But what's causing that? There's no man there or no industry there or anything like that.
And, okay, well, I'd love to have you talk more, but let's take some of your points so that we get more, Cornelius, get more people in. A lot of people are talking about the planet's getting warmer, but ask the question as a skeptical inquirer, who exactly is saying that? You will find that in the sources of a lot of it, it's just Joe Blow on the air and internet that's saying that. There's a lot of blowhards out there that are saying a whole lot of things. That if you actually look at the root of their sources, it's sourced upon other internet sources upon, it's like a circle of kind of talking in their glass of beer philosophers rather than real scientists from JPL and other people often saying these things. Secondly, in the case of our cooling solar, which is I predicted the solar maximum would be very light, but it's not stopping the heating of the planet. If the sun made me do it theory is the way it really is, and it's not human-induced, the global warming, why is it that the most violent hurricane season in this century, 2005, the season that had Hurricane Katrina, happened when the solar minimum was going on? It means no sunspot activity. Climate change denial or the sun made me do it, theories, I've yet to see these being covered by the mountains of evidence of science.
Can we use HARP and all like that? I mean,
no, there's no HARP. That's another.
HARP isn't real.
Boondoggle. Yeah, that's another silly.
Okay, it's another myth.
That's another myth.
I got
another way of distracting you from real things.
I got to get you in a debate, John Hogue, with Nick Begich, and have you guys go at it.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Okay.
We'll do that. A couple more minutes to go. We'll take a couple final calls here. Dominic in Montreal, east of the Rockies. Hey, Dominic, go ahead. You're on with John Hogue.
Hey, hi, George. Love your show.
Thank you.
I just want everybody to know that for quite a while now, there's very powerful forces behind the scenes that are taking care of all the stuff that is being talked about. Catastrophe, financial ruin. By the way, people, if you want to go to the Russian Olympics, go ahead. It's very secure. The whole country is secure. Terrorist group has been taken care of. Other terrorist groups are being taken care of as we speak, among many, many other things.
Pretty vague, pretty general, all and everything.
Ask me a question. Ask me a few questions. Okay, how about this?
Why don't you be comfortable with
weapons of mass destruction?
Do you have a something I can respond to?
No, no need to worry, John. Okay. You're the one taking the questions this time. Okay. Next up, we go to Kelly in Tucson. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kelly.
Hey, John. Hey, George. What's going on?
You tell us. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to just read real quick something that Edgar Cayce said. It's just one line, and it matches the Nostradamus and the German gentleman that John was talking about, and it just goes, Cayce predicted the possibility of a third world war. He spoke of strife arising near the Davis Straits and in Libya and in Egypt and Ingram and in Syria through the Straits and around those areas above Australia and the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf. So I thought that was cool that there was three of them that said that, you know? And also I wanted to say that he also gave us a warning, and I didn't know if John hadn't seen anything like this, about the breaking up of some conditions in the South Pacific and the sinking and rising of the Mediterranean. And he warned that New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco would be destroyed. And he talked about Japan going into this year. So yeah, I just
these are the Earth Changes prophecies of Edgar Cayce.
That's right.
Which have two waves involved with them. One is that a lot of the first wave things happened right on the mark that he saw for 58 through the early 60s. And the locations that he had documented in the 20s and 30s. He documented all of his prophecies, which has inspired me to do the same with mine, so you can check, verify when I get things right and wrong for now decades. The second wave of these things was supposed to come in 1998, and none of them did. that would have triggered an axis shift or a lot of the earth changes, which would bring the western United States sinking all the way to Nebraska, and the possibility of New York being destroyed by a natural disaster or by war. He wasn't clear in his famous 2100 prophecy, which was a waking prophecy. Most of his were written when he was unconscious in a trance. So the other thing is, some of the things you were talking about related to the Middle East, in the way I read those prophecies, it wasn't clearly indicated of a third world war. In fact, I didn't find him being very exact about there being a third world war. It was more about earth changes in those regions.
Huge earth changes. John, we're out of time, but do keep in touch. And as you know, we track your prophecies, so we'll get you back and we'll go through some of them.
Well, thanks for having me on, George.
All right, always a pleasure. John Hoag's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and he's got all his Kindle books available to you simply by going to his website. On our next Coast to Coast program, it'll be a split show. You'll have a couple guests each couple hours, and then Friday night into Saturday morning, we're going to talk a little bit about the secrets of the universe and then open lines. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.